We've invested over $1 billion in direct impact investments. We've delivered market rate returns, and we've generated a lot of positive impact in the world with our investments. So I've been really happy with how this is going and excited to continue to make impact in the world.
Welcome to the Impact You Podcast, an impactful podcast for financial advisors and clients who are interested in making a difference with the money they invest. Your host, Stephen Distante, is Chief Disruption Officer for ImpactU.me, a podcast dedicated to impact investing.
So welcome to Impact You Podcast. That's the word impact, no space, the letter U. An impactful podcast for financial advisors and clients who are interested in making a difference with the money that we invest. I am your host, Steve Distante, the Chief Disruption Officer for ImpactU.me, a podcast dedicated to impact investing. Today, I'm joined by Gloria Newland of TriLink Global. How are you today, Gloria?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
So what's your official position at TriLink Global?
I actually am the founder of the firm and currently the chairman and CEO.
Fantastic. And maybe we'll start off with referring to impact investing, because I'm sure you talk to your friends and family and associates and so on about what you do when you're talking about this confusing world of SRI, ESG, impact. How do you refer to that in a conversation?
Yeah, when I talk to my friends and everybody about what I do and about impact investing, I basically describe it as investing with a bonus. And then people look at you and you go, well, what does that mean? And then we basically say, look, it really all investments can have a positive impact in the world, and capitalism really can be a force for good. But you have to be very intentional about creating that impact with your investments in order for it to be considered an impact investment. And then as I talk more about what I do, I basically explain that I run an impact investing firm that has the goal of giving investors money a voice. And one of the things that I always use is an example to say, look, most people don't think of using their investment dollars to have an influence on the world, on the way companies behave. And you absolutely can. And so we design investment strategies and products for investors that allow you to give your money a voice.
Fantastic. I love that. Money a voice. That makes so much sense. So maybe you could tell us about your impact journey. I love the fact that you use impact. I've been using that for quite some time, and I get corrected, you know, ESG. It's funny when you have a conversation. I was having a conversation with a typical fund family, and they said, okay, I just want to be clear on this. We're impact, but we're not ESG. I said, okay, I get it. No problem. So when on your impact journey, how, you know, could you tell us how you got to where you are and what you do with TriLink Global?
We actually are both impact and ESG. Because we think it's really important to understand a company's policies and practices as a risk mitigant to the portfolio. So that's why we do both. But for my own journey and how I got to this place, I spent almost 30 years, so 27 years on Wall Street in the asset management business. I always ran very large asset management companies. I was the CEO of B of A Capital Management. We were a $35 billion institutional global asset manager. And then before I retired in 2005, I was the CEO of Deutsche Bank's $50 billion private wealth management division for all of North America. And throughout my whole career, I actually had always believed that good companies, and I say that with quotes, good companies would always outperform companies that are either not paying attention to their behavior, their company behavior, or ones that are really bad, right? That they're really doing bad things. And it really came from three different influences in my life. One is my faith that has influenced me since I was very young. The other was my father, who was an entrepreneur and business owner in the U.S. In a small town in Ohio where I grew up. And then third was common sense, because I always looked at it and thought, huh, if a company is doing bad things like polluting the environment or treating their employees poorly, then that is not going to make a good investment, because eventually that's going to get found out and it will affect the performance of that investment. So those were basically my three influences. But until I started TriLink, the only time I really had the opportunity to put that into practice was when I first was at Scudder. I helped develop a socially responsible investing fund back in the late 90s. And then at Deutsche Bank, I got involved with microfinance. And those were really the only two opportunities I had along my career to like try to put any of this into practice. And then I retired in 2005. And honestly, it was because I wanted my life to have more meaning. I had this great career, a lot of success. And I thought, you know, I want to give back to the world. So I retired and became a philanthropist. And for 2 years, I traveled around the world, mostly in emerging markets, getting involved in causes I really cared about. And I had a couple of big aha moments in my life while I was doing that. And one of them was simply that I really wasn't good at that, that business was actually my calling in life. And I was having a lot of influence throughout my career that I really hadn't even realized. And so then that freed me up to say, okay, if business was my calling and it's okay to do that, I would like to do it in a way that really creates a positive impact on the world. And it wasn't until 2007, when I was invited to join a think tank discussion group on how do we use capitalism to solve social problems. And that really is when the big light bulb went off for me, because I thought, wow, isn't that what we should be doing? Is using our investments to create positive impact in the world and holding companies more accountable, you know, to the environment, to their employees, to the community. And as I looked at it, I thought, wow, successful economies like the United States and other developed economy countries, it really is their businesses, their small and mid-sized businesses that create all the jobs, generate all the GDP, generate all the export. And it's also those same business owners like my dad who would give back to their communities. And all of that works to create a successful economy. And so I looked at it and said, wow, if one of the biggest problems is poverty, then what's the best way to get somebody out of poverty? It's to create jobs. But you want to create quality jobs and you want to help reinvest in the community as you're creating those jobs. And so honestly, all of that was the impetus for me starting TriLink, which I started the company at the end of 2008. And that really is when the label of impact investing started to get put on this industry. And we owned it right away. We basically said, look, that feels right. It makes a lot of sense. Companies that you can invest in that are intending to create positive impact. We thought that was a really good label. And I know the industry has fought over that for a while, but we embraced it. We think it's great. And, you know, my goal when I started TriLink really was to prove that investors don't have to give up investment return to do good. And I feel like we've been very successful at that. Although, you know, as an entrepreneur, right, you're never satisfied enough. But I tell everybody we're a 10-year overnight success because it took a few years to get everything worked out, get the funds launched. But now, since we started investing 5 years ago, we've invested over $1 billion in direct impact investments. We've delivered market rate returns, and we've generated a lot of positive impact in the world with our investments. So I've been really happy with how this is going and excited to continue to make impact in the world.
Interesting. And they sometimes refer to triple bottom line, people, planet, and profit, right? Is that what we we say?
Okay, so I'm going to tell you a quick funny story about that. So triple bottom line investing is what it was called in 2007. Like that was the main name, right? In 2007, 2008. And that's really where TriLink came from. So the Tri and TriLink was triple bottom line investing.
Wow. Talk about
isn't that funny?
Taking a good guess, huh?
Well, but it turned out not to be that, right? It turned out to be impact investing. So I made a wrong call, but it was okay because
it's a perfect
find our name.
I love that. That's awesome. So I'm curious. You had your entrepreneurial seizure, as we call it, Michael Gerber, the author of The E-Myth. So you had your entrepreneurial seizure. Unlike most entrepreneurs, we usually have those seizures when we kill the boss. Your dad was an entrepreneur as well. So did you know you were an entrepreneur, or was an aha moment when you were doing this philanthropy? Had you had any ventures really before, or you kind of operated inside of a company as a separate entity? Just maybe hit that for a minute. I want to hear about your entrepreneurial journey.
Sure. I always thought in my life that I would be an entrepreneur, but I found myself in a career that wasn't very entrepreneurial inside of these long, large institutions. And it was something that I really had an itch to do, even as I was having this very successful career. And there were several times, the first time was in 1993, where I really thought, okay, I'm going to, branch out and start my own company. And I came up with an idea. I put it all together, ran it by, a bunch of people. But then I sat down with someone I really respect who was a very successful entrepreneur and a mentor. And I shared it with him. And at the end, he basically said, you know what? You can't do this. And I said, well, why not? And he goes, well, because the first thing you told me is you want to create a company so that you can, one, help the world, but also you want to create one that is scalable because you want to do something big. You don't want to just run a business to run a business sake. And he said, that was when I asked you, why were you doing this? That was your answer. And this idea is not scalable. It will only let you run a business for business sake. And I was like, well, that's not what I want to do. And he said, then don't do this. And that it was honestly that conversation that stuck with me. All the other times that I had ideas and thought, oh, maybe this. And then I would look at it and go, is this really scalable? I just didn't have the opportunity really to do it until I retired. And then obviously I failed retirement, but it was something that I always wanted to do. And I will say I had the great benefit of working inside of a large institution so that I know all of, especially in the investment industry that's highly regulated, I know all of the regulators that touch our business. I know the importance of policies and procedures and process. And so for a small company, we have a lot of policies and procedures and process, but that's the way you scale a business. And I only knew that because of my experience, within large institutions.
That's fantastic. So your business as your calling, putting things together. Maybe you could give our listening audience a flavor for what sort of projects you do over there at TriLink Global.
Sure. I'd love to tell you a little bit more about TriLink and the type of investments that we create. So our current funds are all focused on what we call a private debt plus strategy. So we do private debt, which is simply loans to middle market businesses. And the plus is we're creating positive impact through those loans. And we look for sustainable, responsible companies that are in their growth stage so that they have positive cash flows and assets for collateral. And we focus on very select developing economies. basically because we think that there is so much opportunity in developing economies, and the struggle is how you access those economies from an investment perspective. But clearly, we've seen strong GDP growth much more strong in developing economies than in the developed world. And so we actually have a very disciplined process for selecting countries. And then we have partners all over the world who help us with loan origination, due diligence, oversight. And our investment strategy actually was built on a really simple idea. Kind of even goes back to watching my father in the U.S. Basically, it's the idea that small and middle market businesses are both the foundation and the building blocks for sustained economic development. Because if you think about it, they're the ones who create the jobs, provide stable and growing incomes, pay taxes to local governments that then provide infrastructure, schools, healthcare, et cetera. They drive production of local quality goods and services. And then all of that is propelling the growth of the middle class in their community, which then creates successful economies. And so seeing that as the opportunity, and knowing that there was this huge lending gap in particularly in middle market, I mean, in emerging economies for middle market companies, I said, okay, we need to create an investment strategy that takes advantage of that real investment opportunity that also happens to be a great impact opportunity. And so basically we target, as I said, developing economies. We use these partners to help us identify growth stage businesses that are sustainable, responsible businesses, and companies that have an intent to create positive impact. Those companies could be in just about any industry, except industries that are on the IFC exclusion list, and industries that we feel are not good for the world. And so basically, we screen out companies that are make weapons, that have any kind of nuclear, touch any kind of nuclear energy. We exclude extractive industries, lots of different kinds of industries. But after that, then we look for wide diversification among our industries, among our countries, among our regions, because we really want to create a very diversified portfolio so that no single macroeconomic event could ever impact the whole portfolio. And so in today's portfolio, we have 32 different sectors represented in 30 different countries. And we feel like it's really well diversified. Since we launched our first fund, I mentioned we made over $1 billion of individual loans to 75 different middle market companies in 35 different countries in 4 regions of the world. And at our fund level, we have an impact objective of economic development through creating or through providing access to finance to these underserved businesses, so that they then can create jobs and pay higher wages and pay more taxes and stimulate the local economy. And then we also require each company to have their own impact objective for their company. And it's self-identified, but we do track and report on their progress. So we track and report the portfolio level progress and the borrower level progress. Currently, we support 34,000 permanent jobs in these 35 different countries. And each our borrower companies create direct impact through their own objectives in things like health improvement for their community, or equality and empowerment, or capacity building, or agricultural productivity. And so each of our companies, as I said, are tracked and reported. And one of the coolest things is, not only have we delivered market rate returns to our investors, but we've also delivered a very stable, safe investment for them. In $1 billion invested, we've had no loan losses in the portfolio. which is unheard of. In if you look at U.S. private debt, they're racking up probably 25 basis points to, 1% a year. And we've had none in 5 years on $1 billion. So we've been able to deliver market rate returns and prove positive impact.
That's some story. I really enjoy how you've taken the IFC's, which is the World Bank, I believe it is, their guidelines and implemented. I mean, the UN, the World Bank, I mean, just great places to find, a tremendous amount of knowledge, but also some good guidance from all the different governments that they work with. So that's amazing. So when you did this and now you're doing this as you've had your entrepreneurial seizure, we often refer to on this podcast our blue ocean, your blue ocean strategy or so. And a blue ocean is where you're so unique, so different, you really don't have any competition. You're not doing battle in the red ocean, which is maybe just for returns or just for one particular thing that an investor may want. And you created something totally unique. So is this your blue ocean? Do you have a blue ocean? Is there people competing in the same space as you? Or do you pretty much own the space from the perspective of nobody else even cares enough to do this?
We do own this space. I don't know that it's because no one else cares about doing it. I think it's because no one else knows exactly how to do it. If you think about it, we are literally like a commercial bank on the ground in these 35 different developing economies around the world, lending privately to private companies, and going through the individual selection process and the screening process to make sure they're good companies. We have we do that through our partners, which have feet on the ground. And we've developed a really unique model that is not a fund of funds, but it's a model that gives us access to local expertise, because you don't ever want to be fly-in investors anywhere. You need to know the rules, know the laws, know the people, know the market. And we've created a really unique model that lets us take advantage of this great opportunity that exists, and do it in a way that is both a great financial return and creating positive impact, and being very transparent and reporting on all of it, because we feel accountability is really important. So we want to set an example for everyone. And we literally thought we would have more people following our model, because our first fund was a public fund. So therefore, everything we did and how we did it is very public. So we had to file a prospectus that gets into detail about everything we do. And I basically said, look, we want people to follow us, right? We want people to do this. And what we have found is that other people just don't have the same expertise or the same contacts or the same community group to be able to pull something like this off. And then the big players like BlackRock and all of the, the big financial institutions, I think they just don't have the interest, because it's hard work. It's, hand-to-hand combat on the ground with individual borrowers and people. And, that's not their game.
Understood. Yeah, it does seem like you'd need to really have a passion for this to be able to do the hand-to-hand combat. So it's got to be a unique challenge. And you said you used some evaluation tools for these investments. What could you possibly use for these sort of small investments? How could you? What do you use in order to be able to evaluate whether or not you're going into a company and whether or not they're worthy of you infusing capital into them?
Yeah, so the tool we use is actually for the country. So we developed our own proprietary system that's called MAP, Macroeconomic Analysis Platform. Basically, it uses 30 different factors in three different categories, which are growth, stability, and access. So we run all of the countries through this MAP program, and basically creates a heat map, and it helps us identify countries that are have really strong growth fundamentals, so high growth, high to GDP. And then from a stability perspective, we're looking for countries that have, you know, rule of law, that have really strong legal systems, so you can take liens on properties and things like that, and you can enforce contracts. And then from an access perspective, we're looking for countries that allow foreign investors to get in and out of the country easily, or get their money in and out easily. So countries like China and India don't pass our map screen because of access. They have very strong growth fundamentals. They have, you know, very strong stability scores, but their access scores are off the charts low. So basically, we use that map scoring tool. That's the first screen in our process to select countries. When it comes to companies, individual companies, we basically use standard tools for analyzing cash flows of a company, and then stress testing those cash flows. And so there's nothing really unique about the tools we use for analyzing an individual borrower company.
Great. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Nobody else is using all of those particular points, and makes a lot of sense, especially when you're evaluating. Interesting about India, I've just been there. And yeah, they are very interesting to invest in, but there's parts of their governmental policies, I guess, that don't make it a good place for you to put the money in for your... Got it. Okay. Well, that's good.
It's hard to get your money out if you're a foreign investor.
Interesting. Very interesting. We've spoken long enough. Thank you for listening today to the Impact You podcast. I hope that everybody's enjoyed today's interview with Gloria Newland from TriLink Global. And for serving this community of impactful people to invest in unique and purposeful ways, this is impactyou.me's website, the website that contains this podcast. And I'd like you to stay tuned for many more impactful podcasts just like this. I'm your host, Steve Distante, and gratefully signing off. But once again, Gloria, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Steve. I've really enjoyed it.
Very good.
Thank you for listening today to the Impact You podcast. We hope that you continue to have a passion for serving communities and looking for ways to invest with purpose. Please stay tuned for many more impactful podcasts like this. Thank you.